Follow Mooney Goes Wild on Twitter
at NatureRTE.
Staying with peregrines, in recognition of their outstanding work, the PSNI recently shared an award for tackling crimes against the peregrine falcon. The wildlife officers use innovative drone technology, a UK first, to keep check on falcon nests in at-risk areas and reduce the chances of illegal killings. Emma Meredith is PSNI Wildlife Liaison Officer. I recently met her in Belfast and asked her about Operation Peregrine Watch.
Fantastic project, I have to say. We're absolutely delighted with how it's turned out. It's really that we're using the drones to monitor peregrine falcons and to ensure that they're not persecuted. So a lot of the time we find they're persecuted through whether it be shooting, poisoning or illegal trapping. And from that, we met up with our air support unit within the police, and they got a licence because the birds are paramount, you know, the welfare of the birds are paramount, to make sure that the drones don't actually affect them. So they got a license from the Environment Agency to use drones to basically put a message out to the public: keep your eyes on the sky, because there are peregrine falcons in this area. We know that they're being targeted and we are monitoring them.
I'm surprised the police service needs a license to fly drones, but I suppose the law applies to everybody, even the police.
Well, it's a specialist license. It's from the Environment Agency. So if somebody really wanted to take photographs of birds of prey up close, or to satellite track them or monitor them in any way, you need a license from the Environment Agency.
Okay.
And with that, then you know that whatever you're doing is not disturbing the wildlife. It's more for the wildlife rather than the drone.
So what is the drone actually doing?
So basically, we worked with the Northern Ireland Raptor Study Group, and the Raptor Group gave us hotspot areas within Northern Ireland that there were problem areas where birds of prey were being persecuted. So for example, one site in Armagh was not successful in nesting birds, in actually birds fledging. And this year, for the first time in 15 years, they have fledged their young. And really what the drone is doing is it has got all these different sites, and we know then that they can go and monitor these sites with the drones. Our air support unit have permission on the land to fly their drone, and it basically is a way to prevent people coming on site and trying to target these birds.
So it's not taking photographs of the actual nest site itself, is it? Or
not necessarily, no. It's more to it's more like an extra patrol.
Oh,
really,
see.
You could say, rather than police cars going out and monitoring sites. This is really like a above and beyond extra patrol.
So what does it look like?
Well, that's something.
Does it say police on the side of it or something like that?
It's very unique. That's probably as much as I could say about it. You know, we don't give out photographs of it as such.
Okay, but presumably people know it's there in the air, do they? And that's why they don't go in, or?
Well, I suppose if people know we're monitoring the peregrine sites throughout Northern Ireland, then they'd be very cautious as to where they are and whether or not they should be there.
Now, suppose you're there for a reason, and that is because the birds are being persecuted. What's happening to them, and who is doing it, and have there been any prosecutions?
Well, to take one question at a time, I suppose, so to speak, is the birds are being targeted through shooting, poisoning and trapping.
Yeah.
The Partnership for Action Against Wildlife Crime Raptor reports show this. And from 2009 to 2016, there has been 57 birds persecuted. Between 2015 and 16, there has been approximately 12 birds persecuted, five of which are peregrine falcons. So if we go back to the poisoning, shooting and trapping, that's the offences. So police ultimately have legislative responsibility to investigate those offences, and with that, then that's what we're doing. We're just working above and beyond really what we should, or possibly what we need to do. We want to do it.
Is it deliberate poisoning?
It would be, yes.
Why?
Well, some people just don't maybe like peregrine falcons.
Why would you not like a peregrine falcon? It's a beautiful
bird. Of certain types of birds of prey. Well, that's something maybe to ask the other general public. But certainly, from our perspective, it's the law. They should not be persecuted. They're highly protected within our wildlife legislation, and we look at it like any other crime, and therefore we will investigate it. If we get a report on wildlife crime, our officers will investigate it like any other crime.
Do you know who's doing it? Have you arrested, have you prosecuted anybody? Back to that other part of the question.
When it comes to prosecutions, we need enough evidence to get us to that prosecution. And what we were struggling with slightly was we needed more of a partnership approach and to highlight hotspot areas. So we go back to highlighting these hotspot areas, which is what we have done. We know our hotspot areas in Northern Ireland from our bird of prey reports, which are on our website. And with that, then we run preventative measures, because it is very hard to catch someone in the act.
Yeah.
However, we still try.
But you must have an inkling. I mean, peregrine falcons, what do they feed on? Well, they like the taste of birds.
Well, they like pigeons.
They have a penchant for pigeons,
yes,
I was going to say.
They do.
So is it pigeon fanciers? Is it the pigeon lobby who don't like the peregrines? Because I know in the past that has been the case.
They do like pigeons, yes. And on occasions we have found a pigeon tethered, as in trapped to the ground
and
with a poison on the
back of
it.
And that happened in Dalkey as well, actually. Yeah, that happened in Dalkey.
We will just investigate that, like any other crime, as I said. You know, I'm not here to pinpoint any person or organisation. We're just here to investigate the crime.
But you're being very careful what you say, and I understand that as well. It's fair that you can't say somebody's done something if you've no evidence. So you're a wildlife liaison officer with the PSNI, so what is your own background?
So basically I am there to offer advice, support and assistance to local officers. We say within the police service all our officers are wildlife officers. As I said earlier, they investigate crime like any other crime. Mm. And they can come to my office to seek that advice, support and assistance about anything, whether it be badger persecution, bird of prey persecution, or whether it be illegal deer poaching, or on occasions we also look at fish poaching, although there's other organisations out there that also lead on that, the likes of the Locks Agency and DERA. However, if it's a crime, as per our legislative responsibility, then we will look
You will enforce the law?
Yeah, we will.
So what does the award mean to the PSNI?
We are delighted with this award because it's a UK award. It's not just Northern Ireland. And we just see it as a partnership approach. It took the Environment Agency, the Northern Ireland Raptor Study Group, the local sergeant, you know, the air support unit, the wildlife office, basically, and the press office, I will say as well, because they had to get the message out there, to come together and just work as a very close unit and in partnership to establish what the problems are and what we want to do about it. So to get a UK award and to be recognised for that, I can honestly say I'm absolutely delighted about it.
And it's not just for the birds here in Northern Ireland. As we know, peregrine means wanderer. Peregrination is wandering,
yes,
isn't it, an English word? And, you know, birds from the north go south and vice versa. So it's really important the work you're doing here for us down south also.
Well, that's it. It's a partnership approach in Northern Ireland, and I have to say I'm very delighted to be part of that partnership approach. And we haven't only worked on peregrine falcons. It was the first tester,
yeah,
so to speak. We also monitor the peregrine sites, but we also are now looking at the likes of deer poaching and illegal hare coursing events and things like that. So the Air Support Unit are fantastic to work with and a great resource for us to have.
Well, congratulations, and thank you very much indeed for talking to me today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
More information about that on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. Well, wildlife crime is not just about the killing of birds. Wildlife crime covers a whole spectrum of animals and activities. In terms of the global picture, crimes such as ivory and rhino poaching in Africa come at the top of the agenda. But there's also international trafficking of rare reptiles for the pet trade, the trapping of songbirds such as finches, and crimes such as badger baiting, illegal hare coursing and deer poaching are only too familiar here in this country. After drugs importation, firearms smuggling and human trafficking, crime against wildlife is the biggest money spinner for underground gangs around the world, worth up to €18 billion annually. Unlike the PSNI, An Garda Síochána has no dedicated wildlife crime unit. However, there are members of the force with a vast amount of experience of dealing with such crime in this country. Superintendent Martin Walker has been a member of An Garda Síochána for the past 35 years, and in that time has investigated many crimes and has plenty of live cases on his desk. We're also joined by Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland. Niall, are you surprised to hear this?
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised in the least, no. Working with Birdwatch Ireland and being a birdwatcher all of my life, I know that we have a serious problem in this country when it comes to birds of prey particularly. As Irene mentioned, we have an ecological gap in this country. For a very long time, there were very few birds of prey. We see a high density of crows sort of filling that gap. A healthy environment and a healthy ecosystem needs these top predators. They're not a problem to have them here. They're an absolute benefit to us, to our farming, to our landscape, to all of our wildlife. We do see birds like peregrine falcons in particular being targeted, and it's a scandal. We've had many cases in Birdwatch Ireland where some seriously horrible poisons have been used to target these birds, have put members of the public at serious risk as well, and it's absolutely unacceptable. They've done real figures on how many birds are being killed. A lot of this is anecdotal. A lot of this is people, I must say, within the pigeon racing community coming to us in Birdwatch Ireland and saying that they find it unacceptable as well. They know of people who are doing this. It's also people who are putting out poisoned meat bait to try and kill crows and foxes. I should stress that is illegal. You cannot put poisoned meat out in Ireland. It's a crime to do that. But of course, that's an indiscriminate form of poisoning. Scavengers, any creature that feeds on meat will come and feed on those. And that's what's been killing several of our golden eagles, our white-tailed eagles, our buzzards, our red kites, sparrowhawks, kestrels have been affected by this. We're also seeing effects from rodenticides where birds, particularly barn owls and kestrels, poisons, rat poison, is getting into their food chain. They aren't the intended target, but what's happening is they're eating rats and mice that have ingested poison themselves. This is having a knock-on effect on them. And in many cases, it isn't killing them outright. It's making them less fit, less able to fend for themselves. So when bad weather comes, they succumb more easily to the elements. Or what's even happening with barn owls, it seems, is that some of these birds that have been poisoned, they're in such bad condition, they take the easy option of hunting along roadside verges where there are lights, where they can see prey, getting hit by cars. So the poison has led to them being killed by cars and trucks.
Indirectly,
but yeah, it's still...
They're not deliberately throwing themselves in front of cars and trucks.
Of course not, and that's the case. But what's happening is that they're being forced to alter their behaviour, has been compelled to do this because of the effects of poisons in the system. So some of the poisoning is deliberate.
Can you be sure of that, Niall?
Yes, absolutely. There's been a lot of research on this, and my colleague John Lusby in Birdwatch Ireland has done a lot of research showing that these birds, particularly barn owls that are killed close to roads, killed by cars, tend to have more poison in their bloodstream than birds that are living in the wider countryside or that aren't hunting beside roads and being killed in that way. And there's still a lot more research and work to be done, but we do have a problem with poison in this country, and some of it, in the case with the barn owls, a lot of that is inadvertent and it's not intended, though it's a problem still. But there's a lot of illegal, deliberate attempts to poison.
So you find a barn owl along a roadside and it's been hit by a car, and then you find a high level of poisoning in its system, and you think, well, the reason it was along the roadside in the first place was because of this poisoning has altered its behaviour. And do you kind of then go back and try and find the nest, do little DNA samples to find, if you can, and say, well, it's on this land, so the likelihood is that's where it... who does all this? I'll come on to Martin in a moment, but I mean...
In those cases, the fact is it goes to the use of these rodenticides and the responsible use of them, and when they're appropriate and when they're not, what kind of poisons are being used, what kind of training that people have that do it. I know that, Aina, you've been very involved with the CRRU, the crew.
The Campaign for Responsible Rodenticide Use in Ireland there's been new legislation, European legislation, which has come in from the beginning of January, that permanent baiting with rat poisons is now illegal, except on very particular cases where permission has to be given, and that there are two categories of users of rat poisons, apart from the general public, and the trained professional users are the only ones that are allowed to use the really virulent poisons, the really ones that persist so much and in different quantities, because they have been trained to do so and are wildlife aware. So it's all becoming very much an issue that has been resolved at EU level, and hopefully it'll percolate down to us. 85% of our barn owls have rodenticides in them, and even I was asking about the peregrine falcons, who don't even kill rodents at all, and they were getting it in through the slugs and snails being eaten by the small birds, and then they killing the smaller birds, slugs and snails going into permanent bait boxes. Permanent bait boxes now on farms and outdoors are completely banned, except in the cases of being used by trained professional users. So the legislation is improving and is changing, and hopefully we'll see an improvement in the quality of the birds of prey as a result.
I know we heard there earlier about the problems that DDT caused in the past for peregrine falcons, not just here in Ireland but all over the world. The peregrine is one of the most widespread animals on the planet. They're found on all continents except Antarctica. And in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, the population around the whole world was nearly wiped out by this pesticide called DDT. Now, this is a poison, an insecticide that was sprayed on crops to kill insects. And what happened was birds like skylarks and other seed-eating and insect-eating birds would feed on this. Peregrines would feed on them, and this poison would get into their systems. It didn't seem to cause any particular problems for the birds themselves until it came time for the female to lay her eggs. And when she laid her eggs, the shells were abnormally thin, and they'd always break during incubation. They would never actually get to full term. And that's why we nearly lost the peregrine falcon in the end. That was a case where it wasn't anybody deliberately targeting peregrines, but the species was nearly wiped out. It just shows that these top apex predators are very susceptible to poisoning, because all the poisoning further down the food chain eventually filters up to them.
And are you upset by that?
Very much so.
Martin, now, you're very welcome to the programme. Superintendent Martin Walker from Agarda Síochána. Does that upset you?
It does, absolutely. Now, I don't have an awful lot of experience with it, but we in Garda Síochána are familiar with the problem. And the first time I'd heard of it was at the inaugural Irish Wildlife Crime Conference, which was held in 2013.
Yeah.
And we had guest speakers over on that.
Yeah,
it was fully
that,
addressed.
Yeah.
But it's something which has remained more or less within the domain of the National Parks and Wildlife Service rangers. And they have the expert people to deal with that. And it's enshrined in law under the 1976 Wildlife Act. So they can embark themselves, as indeed can the Garda Síochána.
So what's your role then?
I suppose I'm a support, really, to the National Parks and Wildlife Services, and we work in close harmony and cooperation. We've developed good, cordial working relationships and partnership with them over the years. As I say, we've worked together on numerous joint operations, and we've had successful prosecutions in relation to deer poaching, badger baiting, all of those issues.
And were there many prosecutions last year, would you remember?
I know in my district, which is Kildare South, I have 14 live files in relation to wildlife crime, and in particular finching and hare poaching.
And tell me, is it more difficult to deal with a wildlife crime as opposed to, let's say, a domestic crime?
No, I think one of the main problems, you don't have a power of arrest and it's not an arrestable offence. So with an ordinary criminal involved in a burglary, we can take them, arrest them, detain them under Section 4, put them in front of a camera and lobby him with various questions and answers, and you can get an idea of what he's at. Unfortunately, there is no power of arrest under the Wildlife Act other than for giving a false name, no power to detain. So you literally have to catch them in the act, and that's the best
evidence.
That's
almost impossible.
Well, no, I wouldn't say so, because most of my prosecutions relate to being caught red-handed.
So you'd be on stakeouts, would you? With
well, the members of my district guards would be on stakeouts. And to be familiar with it, and we have a good liaison with the various Irish coursing clubs. There are three of them in my area, and we work with them in close harmony with them, and they are an aid to us, and they give us information, and we direct guards to the scene straight away.
But what Niall is talking about there, somebody puts poison on a piece of meat and leaves it out, which is, as you were mentioning, totally illegal.
Or on a live bird. Carbofuran, one of the most toxic substances you can find. A couple of drops is enough to kill a person. What happens to a person who sees a pigeon in distress? A pigeon or another bird has been tied there, left alive in distress, so its distress calls will lure in a predator. If they were to touch that bird and then inadvertently touch their own mouth or their lip or something with their hand, that could kill them. It's really serious, not just for the birds, but for humans as well. We've had cases where dogs have been killed where they've come across this poisoned bait or poisoned live animals too. So there's a real human health issue here as well.
Tell me about Operation Bambi.
Yeah, Operation Bambi. It was an operation we started after the inaugural Irish Wildlife Crime Conference in 2013. It became apparent that there were groups of individuals going around targeting deer around the countryside. We put an operation in place, intelligence-driven, working in close harmony and cooperation with the National Parks and Wildlife Services, and we made several arrests. One particular individual, we convicted him of shooting 139 stags in a two-month period. And what would he have done had he moved into the December, January, February, March season for females, because he would have, multiples of that number would have been shot. And he was brought to court.
What was he doing with them, just out of curiosity?
He was selling them.
He was selling them for
meat. Meat.
And here in Ireland, was he selling them?
In Ireland,
that's what people
correct.
Were buying them from him?
Well,
asking him for a lot, where did you get these from?
Well, these were actually recorded shoots and sales, which were recorded in a registered wildlife dealer's property. And there is no duty or responsibility on the dealer to establish the provenance of the animal.
Really? Even though it's going into the human food chain?
That is correct. Once they present with a licence granted under Section 29 of the Wildlife Act, issued by the National Parks and Wildlife Service, and also a food handling certificate now, which is a prerequisite since last year. And it's something that needs to be addressed.
Because deer can very well have TB, can't they?
That is correct. And the farmers are constantly lobbying about that problem of TB carrying.
So how do you know the deer, the stag you shot and sold to the game fellow, hasn't got TB and we're eating it?
The Deer Alliance run a very good course. It's called a Hunter Competency Assessment Programme, in which they give instruction on how to examine a deer and the various organs within to see if they're clear of any TB and other ailments. And it's a very, very good course. And I think it's going to be made mandatory this year in advance of getting a licence to shoot deer.
But a poacher with 132 carcasses isn't going to be so pussed about that, is
absolutely
he?
And he's just one incident that we
and
can
what
talk
happened
about
to him in the end.
He had to pay €5,000 to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Fund, which is Emma Higgs. She does wonderful work there, and his firearm, which was forfeited to the state, which was valued at around €3,500. So he suffered significantly for his enterprise. There is also, and people should be conscious of it, if you're caught using a car in connection with the offence of poaching, it's an umbrella term I use, you can be disqualified for up to 12 months. It's an ancillary disqualification. So
from
that's
driving.
A consideration, yes. And forfeiture and seizure.
More,
forfeiture
honest,
and seizure of the car as well.
Martin, is the culture changing? There were two wildlife traditions when I was a child. I can still remember the old system. The old system was you had the big house ascendancy, landed gentry kind of people who were like we are today, concerned about wildlife and stocking the place and all the rest and gamekeepers.
They were stocking to shoot it.
They were stocking to shoot them, but all the great naturalists of the 19th, 20th century more or less came from that class. Now, there was another group. The other side of wildlife was the poachers. And there was a great poaching tradition in Ireland. As a bird ringer, we're quite interested in their side of the house because they had ways of trapping things and stuff like that. So this tradition, and there was a kind of sneaking regard for the poacher.
Yeah, you sound like you're glamorising it, Richard.
Well, that's a value judgment on your part, shall we say. Now, there was a kind of tolerance of this, a kind of, you didn't rat on the poachers. You got the odd salmon that had been tickled down in the river into. And this was the sort of culture that we came from. Now, this is now, that side of wildlife is should be illegal, but does it linger on? Is this tradition, you would know, you've got your finger on the pulse, is this sort of thing still there? Are you still frowned on for proceeding against poachers?
No, and I'd say not, and the public perception is there, you know, as evidenced at the two Irish crime conferences I was at. There's a big lobby against poaching, particularly individuals who are going around the countryside with lurchers, and there's an element of cruelty to that which must be appreciated. If you have an individual who sets three dogs on a deer.
It's very cruel.
Absolutely, terribly cruel. And sets them, and this fight would go on for maybe half an hour, and eventually the deer collapses in pure exhaustion. And similarly, these lurcher individuals, they're out there chasing hares across the countryside. And that feeds into that whole area of rural crime, because farmers don't want them on their land as trespassers. They engage to go out and to poach their hares, but then they're coming back at night time. It's an intelligence unit that they have set up. They're coming back and stealing their property. They're gaining access to the fields. They know the security arrangements. They know the roads, the access points. Those are all relevant things. So there is an issue here of poachers here in Ireland, and we are striving to take it in hand and challenge it robustly.
So no sneaking regard is what you're saying.
Absolutely. No, it'll be dealt with. It's an absolute offence, and it'll be dealt with severely if I come across them anyway.
You mentioned there earlier about finching being a problem at the moment, the illegal trapping of finches and other songbirds. How extensive is that in Ireland at the moment?
I think it's very extensive. There's a black market culture there in relation to finches, which are caught either in trapped cages using decoys or on bird lime, which is a sticky, gluey substance. But these birds then are put in absolute darkness and isolation for a number of days. And I've come across it myself during the courses of searches, a particularly cruel element of it. It's a bird taken from the wild. It's put in a dark enclosure for several days, and it literally loses its mind, and it placates itself. Then that action placates the animal, and then he's used to breed then with canaries, and they have a cross called a mule. These birds then, they're songbirds, and they're sold on the black market, and there's a lot of money to be made on it, particularly this time of the year where you have cold weather. It's easy to decoy them in with food and decoy birds. I have two live cases on my books at the moment. One relates to a search in Newbridge where we caught individuals in possession of trapping cages and dead decoy birds which were left to die in the cages. We had a search down in Carlow in December, and we released, I think it was 20 finches we'd captured and taken from isolation.
And that's
from
what
isolation.
You did. Would you call in the Wildlife, National Parks and Wildlife Service?
Well, I could do it independently.
You do it yourself, just release
No, but
them.
I do work with the National Parks and Wildlife Service. We're mutually supporting, and we have very good individuals there, you know, and they don't take a soft approach. They're challenging as well. But we work with them.
Why would anybody
well.
Want to keep a bird in a cage in the first place? I don't get it. Did you ever keep a bird in a cage, Richard?
No, I did not.
Did you, Niall?
I had a budgie when I was...
Really?
I did.
I'm genuinely shocked.
Why?
Just why would you keep a bird in a cage?
Well, you see, there's a different. I mean, I was a child at the time. I wouldn't have one now. That I'm not necessarily saying that people shouldn't keep birds in cages. What I'm saying is, wild trapped birds should not be kept as pets. It's not appropriate at all. It's very cruel.
We're probably never going to be friends again. But what's the difference? I mean, a bird should be out flying around in the air.
And I do agree. And I wouldn't have a pet bird today. But I did have a budgie called Peter when I was a young child, and I loved him very much. And he taught me a lot about birds. He was very well cared for, very well looked after. He was
and
a captive.
Wouldn't have survived in the wild. If
he
you
wouldn't
didn't
have.
Go.
He wasn't a wild bird. He was a bird that was bred in captivity over many generations. He was a species, you know, it's from Australia originally. It just wouldn't survive in the wild. It's not a wild animal. It's also a bird that's completely habituated to humans. Imagine the terror of a wild bird that's caught, kept in darkness, and then kept in a cage, prodded and poked and looked at. They're absolutely terrified.
Why have a cat or a dog?
I don't, Dana.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's the same theory. We shouldn't have a pet of any animal.
One of the things with birds as well is that they show fear in a very different way to the mammals do. So a frightened human or a dog or cat or fox, they'll show it by snapping and snarling and getting very aggressive. Birds become very docile. That's how they behave. It's almost like they shut down. So very often people will look at a bird and think, oh, it's so calm. It's so peaceful. It's terrified. It's terrified to the extent it's actually shut down. And that's the problem. That stress can kill them. Also, a problem comes when people trap and try to keep birds that naturally would migrate. So an example would be a swallow that would migrate to Africa. Very often the stress of not being able to migrate at the time of year will actually kill the bird, because just the actual levels of stress in its body get so much it just can't survive anymore. It's too traumatic for it. So answered your question, honestly, I did have a pet bird when I was a child, but certainly wasn't a wild trapped one. It was a captive bred member of the parrot family, very well looked after and used to fly around the house.
And you don't keep birds yourself, Martin?
No, I don't. I picked up a robin a number of years ago. He'd fledged a bit early and he was lying in the middle of the road, and I kept him as a pet for a number of years, and he went to work with me down to Carlow. But he was fierce territorial, because if anybody came into my office, he would go for them and attack them, you know.
They're very territorial birds.
But going back to Niall's point, I've seen any of the birds where we've caught them and go to release them on foot of an order from the district judge, we have losses overnight. Simply by handling them, you'll lose about 10%. They just literally drop dead.
Mm.
That's
Are you unusual now on Garda Síochána? I mean,
no, they're on.
You clearly have an interest and a knowledge of wildlife.
Well, I have, and I suppose I'm lucky that I have the rank as well, so I'm able to drive on this particular.
But if you weren't there, would anybody be doing it? Did they say, Asher, leave it to your man? He's interested in it. Is that?
Well, it is defaulting to me at the moment. I suppose I am the conduit for complaints, and they come to me.
By the way, I don't mean that in a negative way. It's better to have somebody actually who's interested, because they'll actually do something. They'll get something done. Yeah. But do you get the support of your peers?
Colleagues. I get very, very good support. We don't have a dedicated wildlife crime unit, and that's obvious. But what we do Well, I suppose originally the 1976 Act, the Wildlife Act, provided for authorised officers, which are essentially national parks and wildlife rangers. So naturally they were going to assume responsibility for that.
Right.
But since 2013, 2014, this whole area of wildlife crime has manifested itself, and we're conscious of it now, and we have appointed liaison officers, wildlife liaison officers, in a lot of the counties. Now, they're not dedicated to it, because it's only about one area of their portfolio. But what we have done, and it has been agreed with the Chief Superintendent Headquarters, we're going to roll out a system where we're appointing inspectors in every district in the country, and we're going to do training days and upskill those inspectors, and they will nominate people who have an interest in wildlife
because
crime sergeants.
That's what you want. Yeah, yeah.
You don't want a guy who has no interest in it and put him in charge, you know, with a position of responsibility relating to deer crime, finching or whatever.
But the reason I ask is because, you know, the National Parks and Wildlife Service do a fantastic job, clearly. But if a ranger from the National Parks and Wildlife Service comes along and says, stop doing that, to some fella who's been doing it a long time, you know, shag off. But if a guard comes along in a uniform, it's on scale Ella.
It is a scale Ella, is correct. But, you know, I've met people who are out poaching on land for hares trespassing, and they'll say, it's our natural right to be out here. And that's a quote.
And is it?
No, it most certainly is not.
But because they feel it is.
They may feel it, but that's no excuse within the confines of the law. The individual farmers, a lot of them are terrified at night time with individuals going around shooting deer, poaching hares and being threatened. I know of a farmer down in Athy who challenged a group of hare poachers and had his jaw broken. So there's, and these individuals, wildlife criminals, as I call them, you know, this is only
criminals.
Part of it.
What do they want
they're
with the hares?
Criminals.
What are they doing with the hares? They
do nothing. They slaughter the hares on the field. They run their own coursing competitions.
Yeah, so they're not giving it to the coursing clubs.
No, because they're dead. The hares are dead, Anna. They're killed. And I've seen photographs of them here from various
elements.
They
go out at night, they poach the hares and kill them at
daytime night. Daytime and nighttime. Daytime, what they normally do during the daytime, they go into a big field, a nice big flat field. They bring pairs of lurchers, which is a type of dog, as opposed to a breed. But they're sighthounds. But they also bring a scent hound, maybe a springer, cocker, something like that, who will raise the hare for them. As soon as the hare runs down the field, they release the two lurchers. They slip the collars.
I couldn't watch that.
Yeah,
I couldn't even watch that on video.
And if you catch it, the guards catch that, that's totally illegal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's mainly how we catch them. But you have to think laterally. You know, any individual who's out at night time shooting with a rifle which can travel 4 miles using a lamp, that's the reckless discharge of a firearm, which is an arrestable offence and can be detained on it. And similarly, since the Animal Health and Welfare Act was introduced in 2013, it gives you a power of arrest and detention now, because the maximum sentence is 5 years on indictment.
One of the issues that I've come across working in Birdwatch Ireland is that sometimes we get incidents of wildlife crime reported to us. We had a situation recently where a peregrine was taken into our office. Someone just found it. It was actually someone involved in pigeon raising who was very concerned about the peregrines. He loved them. It turned out the bird was missing a wing entirely and it had to be euthanized. This was a bird that it was one of the brood of four that had been targeted by this carbifuran poison in Dalkey a couple of years previously, this sort of infamous incident that happened. So it had survived that poisoning attempt. It then after it had been found dead, there's wire tied around it. It seems like was some sort of snare, some sort of trap and used to kill this bird. It was then x-rayed and found out that its body had shotgun pellets inside it that had healed over. So this bird had survived being poisoned, had then been shot, had survived that, and eventually had its wing chopped off at the side of the road. And that's just one bird. We know that because this bird had a ring on its leg, so we're able to track its life history. Another member of that same brood of four that survived the poisoning attempt was found dead in suspicious circumstances in a river in Northern Ireland. There's an ongoing war against these birds, and it's becoming a very big problem. I've spoken to several guards about it, and some indeed take it extremely seriously, and they're very concerned about it. Often they don't know exactly what their powers are or what to do, or they research it. But one of the problems that several guards have mentioned to me is that when it comes to wildlife crime, they don't know even how it's catalogued on the Pulse system or where to find it or what the statistics are, because different guards seem to handle it in different ways. And I think that's an issue too that I think needs to be addressed.
Should we mention the Pulse system, but is that a fact, Martin?
No, that is true, and yeah. You know, there's no point in avoiding that. But that's the whole reason we're going to organise these seminars and upskill the individuals involved in it. We have certain information on the portal. Only the other day I updated in relation to European firearms passes and what you could use them for. So that's constantly evolving. And we're making good strides. And I think we're going to be very successful in that. But we all the agencies have to be involved. Like, I work very closely with National Parks, Damien Hannigan, Wild Deers Association, Noel Boogler, wonderful ranger over in Kildare, working hard on hare predation and badger baiting, all very important stuff.
And have you got a close relationship with the PSNI in Northern Ireland, having listened to the report on Emma Meredith?
I've been invited up by Emma Meredith to participate in the training of their officers up there, just to get a feel for what they're doing. And I propose going up very shortly and try to encompass some of that into our training and see can we take anything from it. And also with the Crime Intelligence Unit over in the UK, because there isn't kind of an international dimension to this whole area.
Oh, I'm sure there's lots of and smuggling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Smuggling of all sorts,
There's some talk about setting up a wildlife crime unit, but at the moment we have liaison officers, and that will be progressed. I think you'll see the impact of that shortly.
Well, hopefully we will. And the message from here is, you know, don't just think you're going to get away with it.
Oh, public intolerance. We need public intolerance. Yeah.
The public need to speak up too, yes.
Yeah, and people, just even to be intolerant of people whom they know. You don't have to snitch on them to the guards, but you can be intolerant nonetheless, rather than saying, I mean, badger baiting, is that still going on?
Badger baiting is still going on, interfering with badger sets, and then pulling badger. You take them live and they build an L-shaped earth in the ground and they put a dog in and whoever pulls the badger around the corner wins. So it's very, very cruel. I have live cases of that too recently. This time last year I had information in relation to a set that was going to be interfered with and I had a surveillance team there and we caught him on CCTV, got him on camera. So they'll face the rigours of the law in due course. We don't tolerate it.
No, and we shouldn't tolerate it. And they should contact on Garda Síochána or the National Parks and Wildlife Service if they happen upon anything that they suspect to be illegal.
Absolutely. Get in contact with us straight away. Mairead McGuinness, MEP, she presented at the Wildlife Crime Conference in 2015 and she said, we are the custodians of the countryside. This is part of our natural heritage. Don't lose it. Take those necessary steps to engage it.
She has a true passion for the countryside.
Absolutely.
And our natural heritage.
She's very, very good.
Well, Martin, thank you very much indeed for coming in. And thank you also.
Follow us on Facebook, RTE Nature.
Mooney Goes Wild on RTE Radio 1.